one, Mr. Grinch. I wouldn't touch you with a 39 and a half foot pole. The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank, stunk.
Boondoggle, boondoggle. Boondoggle? What the heck is a boondoggle? Come out President's Day weekend to Cars Park in Titusville, Florida for family fun, great fishing in the no motor zone, and hang out with a bunch of crazy kayakers.
We're going streaking! Yeah!
Put your clothes back on, Chuck. For more information, please visit yakangler.com, your ultimate resource for kayak fishermen.
Merry Christmas! Early as heck. To everyone in the Kayak Fishing Radio community, and welcome to Kayak Fishing Radio Mid-Atlantic. I am your ho-ho-hoed host, Mark Elaine Crew Wheeler, and as you can tell, I love the Christmas season. It's Christmas, that's what's on the calendars, that's what the government stops all work for, so there, na-na-na-boo-boo. So it's Christmas, and it is a great time. All right. With that being said, we have our end of the year show. I want to cap off the part two of Clearwater bass fishing, and specifically deeper water. So it should be a pretty good time. Now let's see here. It's going to be great. A great show. Let's recap this past year before we do anything. It's been pretty eventful. This is my second year being a host to everyone. I say it all the time, but I truly mean it, that it's, you guys are the ones that make this possible. It is truly my pleasure in being the host of the Mid-Atlantic show and to encapsulate not just the local region in Virginia, but pretty much the whole East Coast. I mean, we have Hammerhead Great Chris, who's up in the Northeast, New Hampshire. We got Yak Chum in New Jersey. What's going on, Matt? I saw you in the chat room. Going all the way down the coastline, North Carolina, we've had people calling, South Carolina, Scuba Stan, LGB, Didi Olson, down to Georgia with Chip Gibson and the crew down there, Soccer Dad, David Minich, and the rest, and, down in Florida. We've even had folks from, Texas and, the Central Plains states call in, and all the way, across the seas, we've had reports of people downloading from Japan. We had that guy calling from Okinawa that one time, actually. And it is a true pleasure, to be, able to do this on a worldwide scale and to learn on my side. Trust me, I've learned every show. And also having the opportunity to... gosh darn it, my computer just crashed. All right. Sorry if you called in or if you're in the chat room, I can't see you right now. I do apologize. My computer just crashed. Really. But like I said, having the opportunity to learn, from all the other shows. And, my goal is that, at the end of every show, if I can get a good topic going, that you can walk away going, dang, that makes sense. I just learned something. I got to thank King Rat. Sorry, I cannot remember your name right now. I just know you as King Rat, buddy. Great kayak fisherman up on the Eastern Shore. We share emails all the time. Hey, have you heard this? And have you seen this? And I try to reply back as best as possible. So I thank everyone out there for that. And I also, it's Christmas season, time to give thanks. I got to thank Jackson Kayak. This is going to be my about a year and a half now I've been with Jackson, and the ability to be with such a down home, wonderful, truly truly a kayaker's company is a true joy. I've been with Mustad this year as well, and I cannot thank Mustad enough for everything they've done. With different things. Spro, another one I've been dabbling in, thanks to Jackson. Cocotat, Orca Coolers, and all coolers is really their first year, and having the opportunity to see their coolers being made, because they're made in the same factory as Jackson Kayaks, if you didn't know that. But seeing the Orca cooler being made, having the ability to talk to the VP of sales and marketing and everything else, it's a true, it's awesome, because they're the same, those guys are the same, I think name's just Terry Wild. I'm sorry if that's not you, buddy. I'm so bad with names. But you're able to sit there and, have a conversation with them. Just down home, this is my cooler, man. Check it out. This is what it's all about. If you don't like it, hey, that's fine. But, it's a wonderful cooler. Truly, truly, raises the bar, the same way that Jackson has. And I can't say enough about them. And let's please support Orca Coolers, because they support, Susan G. Komen. They support Wounded Warriors, outdoor lifestyle. And, that's awesome. Robson Paddles. It's going to be Jackson Paddles. I can't thank you guys enough. I mean, you truly have allowed me to come in and help, work this paddle out with you guys. So this way we can bring it to the United States market. Actually, the North American market, a truly superior paddle. And I really hope you guys check this out when it comes out. I know that they'll be at the Boondoggle. So please check that out. My computer's still loading, so I do apologize if I can't see anything. Or if you called in, and I do apologize again for that. But, I think, like I said, this is going to be an awesome paddle. Those that have seen this paddle, I've taken all your criticisms, critiques, and I've relayed them to the designers and everything else. And needless to say, the newest paddle that just came out that we just redesigned is truly going to be amazing. It's actually going to blow some people away, and I think that's awesome. Everyone that's made this possible, again, Chip Gibson, I can't thank you enough, buddy. Tree Hugger, as everyone calls him on the boards. Chip started this 3 years ago, maybe three and a half now, on TalkShoe, I think was the one we were on. And, we had our issue. He had his issues trying to get people in and everything else. He moved there to Blog Talk, and Blog Talk's been excellent. I can't thank Blog Talk enough for the ease of use and their, response times. Even though there have been some moments where it's been like, oh, don't do that, don't do that. And then we got to call them up like, hey, can you fix this for us? But, I cannot thank everyone enough with that. Chip came on. We had Rob for a while. I came on after Rob. And then Chuck, Nothing Miller. And by the way, congratulations, Isaac, on the beautiful baby girl. Don't remember her name. I do apologize. My wife's putting cookies in my face. Evil. Like I said, congratulations, Isaac, on your new addition to your household. Chuck came on, and then the Loziers. And like I said, all of us, past and present and, the future. Cannot thank you all enough for supporting us throughout the year, even in hard times when we're sick and whatever else. We don't get paid for any of this. All these sponsors are my personal sponsors and or our supporters. And, it's a true joy that we have the iPod and Droid app. So thank you again, everyone involved who joins our shows, who listens in, who downloads the podcast, who listens on their phones. Now, I mean, we can't thank you enough from the really, truly our bottoms of our hearts. All right. With that being said, one last thing. We're going to adhere to a moment of silence for the Sandy Hook victims. Prayers to everyone and their families, friends, and that whole community. Okay, hope everyone, you know, had their moment. Let's get right to it. Clear water bass fishing in deep lakes. I didn't get any emails or responses, so apparently I ran over everything pretty well on the last session. So here we go. Deep water fishing in clear lakes. We broke down structure last week. We broke down baits a little bit too. You know, and one thing I didn't break down was topwater lures. And the reason for that is they kind of incorporated my deep water presentation setups on larger body baits, i.e. swim baits, tube baits, big tubes. We're talking 4 to 6 inch tube baits. Along with that, many other baits out there, mostly because of profile, shadowing, contrast, stuff like that. And we're going to get into that in a little bit. But let's break down, like I did last week, cover, structure, all the important things. And with deep water lakes, you have physical structure, okay, and cover. Rocks, boulders, points are considered cover and structure in my eyes. A point coming off of land and a point in the water, a rising, are two things I cover in there. Along with non-physical, what I mean by that is the thermocline. And that's a very important thing to understand, what a thermocline is, okay? And I'm breaking it down into layman's terms, okay? Because I can sit there and I can read off of Wikipedia or whatever what a thermocline is, and I read it sometimes and I go, huh? Basically what a thermocline is a break in two different densities of water. It's the best way I can explain it, right? So you can, if you have a good fish finder, you'll see the thermocline. It'll be a line on your finder. You'll have a bunch of stuff above it and nothing underneath it, or vice versa. And it all depends on that density of water. Oxygen level, temp, all break into that. You see this really you see this really well offshore in the ocean. Some major lakes have a really predominant thermocline. And the relation that fish do, you know, in the summertime, they might be underneath the thermocline. Sometimes they might be above it. And it's all about finding those fish. And the key to deep water clear lakes is, yes, you can see the fish 9 times out of 10. Yes, it's 30-foot visibility. But if you're fishing in a lake that's 60 feet deep, you're missing everything underneath you. And this is where I truly, truly think that if you fish a lot of deep, clear lakes, you're going to want a fish finder. Break down fish finders real fast, okay? And this is me personally. The Lowrance systems, if you fish any salt water, okay? And people say, oh, I've had hummingbirds and everything else. But for ease of use, for reliability, and really good customer service, personally for me, Lowrance, especially the DSX or the 5 series, Elite 5 series, the Elite 5 DSX or the X are excellent, excellent kayak units. Again, you're going to spend some money. You're going to spend $600. But with that, you get a superior system with GPS and, you know, the structure sound and whatever else, okay? And then if you only fish freshwater, you know, Garmin, you can Hummingbird are two excellent units for freshwater. The reason I prefer them for freshwater, Hummingbird and Garmin for freshwater, Lowrance for saltwater, is because Lowrance has a, and Garmin has it too, but I don't think they have as much detail as the Lowrance systems, is they have a locking system in the back. We actually plug it in, you turn it, and it locks in to make sure there's no moisture getting into there, okay? Lowrance also has a piece, and same with Garmin, I believe, where when you're done with your trip, you take a cap, you put it back on, and you tighten the same washer or nut down, okay? And what that does is it locks everything in, so you keep the water, the moisture out, and keep away from the contacts, and you don't have any issues. Hummingbird doesn't have that. It's just a push-in system. The larger systems, yes, do have a turn sign, but many of us aren't going to buy the $8,000-$9,000 units to put on a kayak. I know people that have, and you know, more power to them. But you know, $600, get a great unit with the Lowrance system. They had the M68 CXX, I believe it was the last three, the CSX, I can't remember, or the CS, excuse me. They don't have that anymore. If you could find that system, it's a the credit card screen, which means the screen is the size of a credit card. It already has preloaded GPS maps, okay, and bottoms. Granted, you can't update them or anything else, but they're there. It's a good basis, along with a really, really kick, killer color fish finding screen. If you can find one of them, they were about, let's say, $175 to $200 a year and a half ago when they discontinued them. So you only imagine what they are now. You probably find them on eBay, and they take the same transducer as many of the other ones. So if you just find a unit and no transducer, don't worry about it. You can put most of the other transducers right on there, no issues. And, of course, if it breaks, send it back to Marantz, and they'll give you a brand new unit. Either it's a new M68 or one of the newer ones that they have now. All right. Like I said, fish finders are key in identifying those deep water structures and in identifying the fish. So let's look at things you want to look for and specifically structure. On deep, clear lakes, okay? And what I mean by deep lakes, I'm talking anything over, 30 feet is where I start going into deep water. Let's say 20 feet, okay? The reason I say 20 feet is because that's about as deep as you're going to ever get with a crankbait, okay? And I base everything off of crankbaits. The reason for that is... or crankbaits or similar baits, is crankbaits are the quintessential shallow water bait, meaning that, especially with kayakers, we can only cast it so far, we can only work it in the strike range for so long before it removes itself from that area and becomes pretty much inefficient. Everything else past that is, you just have to turn to other baits. So we're going to start at 20 feet and more. I'm being attacked by children. Go away, guys. Go. Go bug mommy. Go bug mommy. Yes, I see. Go. Thank you. Sorry. So, let us break down structure for deep water lakes that are different than shallow water lakes, but they're kind of interchangeable in the same sense. And the first one are points, secondary points, and points we can't see. And this is really important because in deep water lakes, 9 times out of 10, I'm not going to go that far, let's say 7 times out of 10, so we're looking at, 3/4 of the opportunity of catching fish or points in general are going to have some sort of substrate, rock, gravel, zebra mussels in the mid-area. A riverbed, stuff like that. Those are going to be very predominant in the area, okay? On most of the points, for whatever reason that they're there, those are the ambush points those fish are going to be at. And the ability to fish a point in a deep water lake, you might have, let's say the lake's 80 foot deep where you're sitting, right? And you're about 100 yards from the bank. All right, you're at 80 feet, and then you come to a spot, and all of a sudden you're in 40 feet, the point is still there. The cliff face is still there. The ambush areas are still there. You could paddle a good quarter mile, and that point is still going out until it hits flat bottom again. And along with other points, other structure, points are so key to the deep water mentality that, if you pass up a point and you don't at least try to fish some of it, you're wrong. And to really break it down even farther, it truly behooves you to use that fish finder, okay? And the first thing you're going to look for is a difference in the point and difference in the bottom. And how you do this is what I do is I start right from the bank, okay? and I get a general idea of where that point is headed. And I will paddle perpendicular to the point, about 20 feet, until I can see it, you know, the change. And I'll immediately spin around, because you can do that in a kayak, spin around and paddle 40 the other way. What I'm basically doing is I'm crisscrossing, and I'm mapping, if I have the technology and the GPS unit, mapping the bottom, marking all of those important spots. This is where GPS is so crucial, okay? Mapping out all those spots where it's different. What do I mean by different? That point might be coming down, also it might have a saddle in it. You know, a dip in it, that could be an ambush point. That could be a spot that the bait's moving over or something's moving through there on a regular basis. Okay, it could be, you know, a point where there's an, if you have a current, and that'll happen sometimes in deep lakes, where you'll be down 20 feet, and all of a sudden there's a current all of a sudden, okay, that's where the thermocline might be, or maybe it's 40 feet, maybe it's running over top of that you know, that saddle, that's why there's that saddle there, for whatever reason, there's a current running around that one spot, from hydroelectric dams or whatever, you know, are viable reasons for that. Boulders. You'll go and all of a sudden you see a lump. You mark it. You come back over it, and you know the next pass, because you're gonna have a pretty good wide of a cone of your fish finder. You can see that same hump, but it's not as deep. You go, aha! So between that section there, I'm gonna mark both points. Then I'm gonna break it down even farther. Okay, you know this is the top, so it could either be a cliff face, and I'll run over that spot a couple of times doing a figure eight, really understanding that structure. Okay, as best as possible. Run around it, okay, I got an idea. If I'm running around and I see bait around it, I know, okay, that's where they're holding. Many times on pretty much all units, you're going to have different icons, okay, for different things. Might be a church, might be, you know, a steeple, you know, open the doors and see all the people. We'll be there, okay? And you know, I'm marked. Each one has a different thing. And if you don't have a logbook with you when you're freshwater fishing, you're really cheating yourself out. Because I actually have a printout sheet that I keep in it. You know, it's just a little thing. And it shows, you know, large boulder with fish will be, you know, a red point. Abnormality holding fish will be a question mark, okay? This might be something, I just don't know what it is. It just looks weird on the bottom. It could be, you know, a graveyard, which is very, very possible. It could be, a 58 Buick. You just don't know. So that's why I have abnormalities. I have a bunch of other things. It's actually going to be a different show later on down the road. Okay, so I'm figuring out the points. And I'm taking all those little abnormalities. When I see fish marks, and I'm looking for a big ball of bait, and I see, you know, larger marks around that, I'm marking that spot, okay, because, and that's a whole different thing, you know, it's found bait and fish, mark the spot, okay, if I come back there, you know, a week later, and I come over that spot, and I see the same thing, I know that that's a spot where bait's sitting for whatever reason, it could be an upwelling, it could be one of a million different reasons why bait is always sitting there. But now I know, aha, there's a reason for that. I might not know it, but they're always there, always a spot. It could be a secret. You know, I could have boats running over all day long. For whatever reason, there's baits here, and along with that bait are predatory fish, bass, smallmouth, spots, wipers, stripers, catfish, a debt collector, whatever. You know, are all there. To feed on that bait. Alright. So I mapped out the point. So this way I can hit those spots. Now, what I do is after I map an area, I leave. Because I've been up there, I've been splashing around, I've been doing a lot of things. And I'll go map another area. If I have 2 points side by side, within general, you know, generally close, within, you know, I'm going to say 300-400 yards, it takes nothing after mapping out that second point to come back and fish that one. And I tell you, the best thing you can buy are marker buoys. Okay? They're cheap. You can buy 3 for like $15. Okay? And what I do is I make one pass. Starting from the shoreline, I move all the way out, and when I mark fish, I drop a buoy. keep going down that point, see fish again, I drop another. Now, I use three buoys, okay? And I drop one, and I go 20 feet, and I see another dude, I don't drop it right there again, because I know they're going to be in that general area. All right, I'm talking if I'm going down that point, and it's a long point, we're talking 75, 80, 90, 100 yards, okay? You know, every 30, 40 yards is where I'm going to drop my next buoy when I see fish, if that ever happens. Sometimes you paddle the whole way out there, and all of a sudden that last little piece of structure, you know, it could be, you can see on a map, that that's, you know, crushed gravel, and it's the spawn for smallmouth in, you know, February and March time frame. And, you know, all of a sudden there's marks everywhere. Yeah, that could be my spot of fishing. You know, and that's also key, is understanding your species going after and what's in that lake. Smallmouth, they have no issues. And I've caught more spawning smallmouth in 40, 50 foot of water than I have, you know, on shoreline. But I say, hey, literally, I'll be fishing for bass that are bedded up on the shore, be blown off that spot, look at that, my fish finder, and see marks on the bottom, realizing that's smallmouth dropping down the same bait I was catching the largemouth on and catching a breeder smallmouth. I mean, that's just cool. You know, to be able to transition between spawning fish and their and what they like is awesome. But like I said, you find the fish, you start fishing for them on points. Don't overlook the secondary points. And the secondary point is basically you have your main point coming off the edge, okay? Within, I'm going to say, 100 yards, you're going to see another little point come out. That's called a secondary point, is what I clarify it as, okay? And those will hold fish more than points sometimes. That's all about what the fish are feeling, barometric pressure, how much stress they've had, how deep that point is, you know, the thermal. There's so many reasons why that secondary will be more predictive than the main. But a lot of times it's about pressure, fishing pressure. Everyone hits those main points, but they look at that little other point and they go, and there's no fish there, and they bypass it. You know, and that's a crying shame. Other things you'll see are roadbeds in deeper water. What are roadbeds? Basically, it was a road that went through that area before the reservoir was dammed many times. And, you know, that's broken up. Now, it's now broken up asphalt concrete. It could be brick. If it's really old, it'd be old brick. But they're all areas that hold fish. And they're nice and long. So if you get the wind just right, you know, if you map it out and you know where they're at. Actually, there's one Byron Creek Lake, which is in Virginia, about central Virginia, is Mecca in my eyes. This place is awesome. You drive up, and the heavens opens up, and, you know, angels come flying down, you know, and midgets on tricycles. It is awesome. Just standing timber everywhere. You could actually lose your mind. And it's a deep lake. We're talking 60 feet, 80 feet in some areas. But there's a spot where there's an old roadbed that comes down through there. And it was actually dammed up in the 80s. There's an old tractor. It's off of a point, about 30 yards off of a point. And if I didn't have my fish finder, I would have never realized what it was. And, you know, thanks to Lawrence again with their structure scan, I was able to pinpoint what that was and go, that's a tractor. And in that tractor were some great fish. And that's all things you see in a roadbed. You know, it could be just off the roadbed. You're like, wow, that looks like a 51, you know, Bel Air, you know. And it's all very viable. Along with, you know, rolling up and, you know, to a spot and going, that looks like a church on your fish finder. And, you know, these are all things that, you know, small towns that were, you know, basically, you know, told, sorry, dude, you guys have to move because we're going to flood you out, you know. And all areas that hold fish now is the same concept as dropping sinking a ship offshore. Same concept, same idea. And they all hold fish. The whole base fish, the whole the plankton that feed the shad, that, you know, feed the bass, that feed the osprey, you know, are all things that'll be there. So, like I said, having a fish finder, breaking down the bottom, you know, points, submerged vegetation are huge on some of the the Northern Lakes, you'll be in an area where it's 40 feet deep, and you got, you know, hydrilla that's coming up 10, you know, that comes up, you know, 50 feet off the bottom, you know, like kelp out west. I mean, it's crazy, crazy stuff to see, but it's all fishable. And that's where deep lakes become such a pain in the ass. I'm sorry if I'm not supposed to say ass, but it's the Christmas season, and I've been drinking eggnog. So, yeah, definitely. You know, those are the areas you're going to want to hit. Map out. This is the time of the year. If you're up north and you haven't frozen over yet and you're looking for just getting out of the water, you don't really have to necessarily fish it. Granted, you can really do really well. But get there with that, you know, new toy you picked up for Christmas, you know, and map out your, you know, fishing areas. Areas you can reach easily, so you can go out there, the, you know, in the summertime and tear them up. All really good things to do. All right, baits for deep water. And I want to stress this again: please learn how to throw a tube. Okay, tubes are the simplest baits to throw, okay, can be used. I think there's more ways to rig a tube than there's a worm, okay, and I mean, the possibilities are endless, and you can use the same tube, as long as you don't tear it up too bad, and fish it a million different ways. Along with that, okay, rattle traps. Please learn how to use a lipless crankbait. If you don't know how to use one of them, and you just go, they hang up too much, or for whatever reason, you are really shortchanging yourself, you know, in a great, great technique for deep water. But we'll talk more about them. Some new additions to your tackle box or your arsenal are blade baits. The old school blade bait. What a blade bait is basically a piece of metal with a with some molded in lead, okay? Basically, that's what I'm explaining. And there's a bunch of holes in there that you can connect your bait to, okay? That each hole gives the bait a different presentation. Excellent baits for vertical jigging. Excellent bait for yo-yoing, casting out and, you know, yo-yoing it back through a school. There are no rattles on it. It's when you really want a real quiet presentation. They let off a little bit of thump because they wobble, okay? But it's not a huge rattle. It's, you know, nothing crazy. And they're excellent, excellent bait for deep water and cold water. Because many times your deep water lakes are going to be cooler than most of the other ones. Now, it could be 10 degrees. It could be 5 degrees in your local lake. But again, that's a humongous difference in the gilled world. Blade baits, spoons. Spoons are becoming very popular as of recent times. And they're, you know, everyone thought that you cast this thing out, you let it sink, you reeled it in. But, you know, the options, or you fished it vertically. Now people are realizing, wait a second here, I don't need to do that. I can fish this bait more effectively using a yo-yo, using, you know, just a dead stick, okay? Or just dragging along the bottom if you're using small gravel. You know, you're in a small gravel pit area. You know, I almost forgot a humongous key to deep water fishing, if you can find it. Limestone or shale cliffs, okay, are awesome. And a spoon is great for them. Basically, you know, a deep cliff that comes all the way down, okay. I'll run them right along the side of that cliff, and I'll mark the thermocline. I'll mark the points that are sticking out that I can't see. And then I'll pull out and back around. I'll fish that whole area and really concentrate on those spots. But when I get out there, right, and I throw a spoon towards a cliff, I use the Sexy Shad Spoon by Strike King. Do bass eat snails? Yes, they do eat snails. especially this, use smaller ones, delete snails, delete every type of bug. If it can fit the bass, they're not picky. I mean, they eat birds, snakes, other fish, insects, small children, you know, zombies. I think if a bass got big enough, he'd eat a zombie. If you have an area that's loaded with snails, bass will definitely eat them. Especially if you got, well, I should say that, you know, smallmouth will eat more snails than largemouth per se. Because the reason for that is when smallmouth get larger, they don't stop eating bugs. Okay? When largemouth really get bigger, granted, it's a great protein source in you know, bugs, but it's much less than, you know, a injured bluegill or stunned shad. If that makes any sense. But smallmouth with their small, they're you know, real structure oriented. Is there a way to use small snails? Unfortunately, I don't think there is a way to use small snails as bait. But you can. We'll get to this in a second. You know, get me off target, game man. Darn it! What was I talking about? Oh, ledges. But I'll throw that spoon right. I'll put it right against there, and I'll pull it off, and then immediately open the. I use a spinning reel for this exclusively because I'll pull it off the ledge, or I feel it's down, I'll pull it off the ledge, immediately open up the bail. So I want that bait to fall vertically back down. And a lot of times they're rear weighted and actually shoot back towards there, and you actually feel, you actually watch the line jump, and then all of a sudden start taking line again. That could be one of two things. Either A, the fish has picked it up, or B, you just smack back into the rocks and now you're plummeting south again. Or back down the deep. Until I feel, let's see it stop. I'll give it a second. Okay, stop. I'll come tight, and I'll feel for, you know, any sort of mouthing or any sort of, you know, feel. If I don't feel that, I'll pop it off, immediately open the bail again, and let it fall again. You'd be surprised by just doing that and bringing it back in and let it catch onto those spots. It's like a bait fish jumping out of the crevices, okay, coming out and going, oh, crap, there's a big bass, and then shooting right back in again. And I've actually seen them, you know, you pretty much see what's happening. I pulled off a ledge and came back. So like I said, it's rear-weighted. And well, in the flutter, it shot back into the rocks. And I saw this bass, he was all of 10 pounds, come up underneath this out of a crevice and jam his head into this spot where this spoon was. And, you know, of course, I had the premature ejaculation, and I snatched the bait right out of his mouth. So I just couldn't believe this thing. You know, it couldn't get to the bait because it jammed itself on this ledge. His head was so big it couldn't fit. It killed me. But, you know, it shows you how effective baits like that are on those crevices. But spoons are a very viable option. And then the piece of resistance, one that even in the hardest of areas will produce, in my eyes, is a drop shot. And it is absolutely limitless on the number of uses for drop shots. Great versatile bait. Actually, let me rephrase it. A great presentation, really of presenting a bait a million different ways and styles. Is actually the best way to put it. Because they're not really presenting a bait. There's hundreds of ways of presenting a drop shot. Secret set, super secret or secret weapon lures. Makes the recoil rig. If you can find it, great. If you can't, you're missing out. But drop shots are awesome. You can work them vertically. You can cast them. You can swim them. You know, if you're fishing an area that's, you know, where the fish are spawning, you can stick it right in literally put it right in the center of the bed and just sit there and just piss the fish off. And sit there and jiggle, 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 pause. Jiggle, 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 drop. Did it come down to the bottom? Bring it back up and jiggle, 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 jiggle. And literally, you'll see a bass and, you know, it'll be sitting there first minute. He's like, whatever. And, you know, second minute, you see him start to turn and look at it. By minute three, you can almost, you know, see the eyeballs change, you know, get real blood red, you know, the fire starts coming out of his vent, you know, just pissed. And, you know, you'd be jiggling it. And I'm telling you, when you drop, what I mean by drop is you keep the line tight and you're just barely just making that bait move. And then you bring an amount, as much slack as you can into the line. And it makes the bait drop. God. And it looks like that bait's, you know, sitting above, you know, that, like a predatory fish, shad, bluegill, whatever. It's sitting there, he's kind of, you know, trying to feel things out, real nervous. And he goes, ooh, there's an egg right there. And he drops down. Okay. When that bass is already teed off, okay, he just won't eat it. He kind of mouths it or whatever. And also that bait drops from being suspended to the bottom. Y'all, if you don't have two hands on your rod, don't even look at the bait. Just don't even look. Just kind of turn your head up when you start seeing him move close. Okay, he drops down the bottom, give it a full count, and then slowly lift it back up. If you feel anything heavy there, okay, it is your mission, if you choose to accept it, and I prefer, hopefully you do, is to turn that fish inside out. Gut him. I mean, just like, you know, people across the lake, okay, should know that you just hooked into a monster, okay? Simple as that. And it's so much fun. And that's how I actually prefer fishing spawning bass. And that'll be for a spring show coming up, spawning bass and everything else with that. So, all right. Drop shots, spoons, tubes, fishing deep water lakes, I'm going to say four baits that you should tie up on your rod immediately when you go to leave the boat or leave the docks. That is a large tube, 4-inch tube, okay? Again, as close to the coloration of fish and the size of fish, usually it's about a 4-inch tube is what I start off immediately, okay? Use the tube. Second bait I'm going to throw, because it is deep water, okay, is a drop shot. Period, end point. Drop shots are great. You can work them really fast as a search bait and do very well. Third bait is going to be either A, lipless crankbait, B, a blade bait, or C, something I really haven't talked about. I kind of said it last week, but it's going to be a jig, okay? And it's going to be a heavy jig. Okay, I start off heavy in deep lakes. 9 times out of 10, I'm working the last 5 feet of bottom until I hit that thermocline. Okay, then I'm bringing right back in. And it takes a lot of practice to be able to, you know, figure out, okay, my angle is this, and, you know, I brought this far, I'm just above the thermocline. You know, I'll work it through the thermocline, sometimes I'll chase it down in there, but, you know, I'll just bring it up when it starts getting, you know, almost vertical with the kayak again. We're talking 3/4 ounce to 1 ounce. Big football heads, because, like I said before, a lot of times most of your points are going to have some sort of substrate, rock, concrete, you know, a 57 Bel Air, and that football head is going to help, you know, hornet head will help bring it, keep you getting snagged as much. And then another bait I really haven't talked about, but I find works very, very well in deep water, okay, is a large sinking swim bait. And this is where I was getting at with the snails. And Matt brings up a great thing. He's well, basically, Yak Chum has said in the chat room, especially as bass eat snails, they do. I give an explanation on that. Clear water lake near him is loaded with snails. And then he asks, is there a way to use small snails as bait? If those snails were in shallow water, okay, and I'm talking, you know, let's say you got a flat and it's just loaded with snails and the bass are everywhere in there, they're just not feeding on the, you can't see them feeding on the snails, you go, why are they sitting here? Take a large lipped crankbait, the biggest one you can find, the one that digs the deep, and I'm talking the big, you know, one, if you can find a lip on it that's about 8 inches long and about 10 inches wide, now it's pretty exaggeration, but use it. Okay, but, you know, a big, heavy-duty lip crankbait, okay, and basically what you're going to do is you're going to cast that bait as far as you can, crank it as hard as you can through those snails, break them up. Toss them in the, actually, it'd be like seeing those old, Acme or Looney Tunes commercials where the bulls are going through the crowd and people are bouncing, you see snails doing that. You're taking them off the bottom. And all of a sudden you'll be going, all of a sudden you see this submarine-like wake come up, on the flat. And this big old nasty mossy back is just actually balls to the wall, tooting the train horn, ball, here she comes, and hammering that thing. Why is that? Okay? It's because those bass aren't eating the snails. They're eating what's eating the snails, if that makes any sense. So they're sitting there, here comes a bluegill. Bluegill's like, oh, free snail. He starts chowing down on those snails. That's a great meal for a bass. It's a big, healthy, bellyful bluegill, okay? You're getting two meals in one. It's like a turducken. You're just not getting a turkey, you're getting a duck and a chicken. So this bass is not only getting a bluegill to eat, but he's getting a bellyful of snails in that bluegill to eat as well. Two for one. It's like a, Macy's Day Parade. It's great. That's what I would do. If they're deeper, then this is where the big, heavy-duty swim bait. I'm not saying go out and buy a bull shad, granted. True Tungsten makes a great one. So many companies make a great hard-bodied swim bait. Okay? If you've got one that's a cheap plastic one, Bass Pro makes one, it's like $10. Storms. Huh. I almost forgot about them. Storms, don't even worry about the other swim baits. Just buy a bunch of 4-inch storms, okay? And basically what you're going to do is cast them out, keep it in free spool, because you want that bait to drop vertically. Granted, storms aren't really going to do that because the way the head, the weight's placed, it'll more, it'll do the crankbait where it'll dive towards you a little bit, but if you keep the line slack, it'll fall more in a vertical than in a parallel or intercepting line of your kayak. You can bring it all the way to the bottom, basically, okay? You slowly roll it over top, and that's going to tip along, bounce them off those snails and off the rocks, okay? Again, swim baits are really underused, especially those big storms. Work them through there, and you'd be surprised, man. Especially if you knock a couple of those snails off. You're going to be in limited out time, limited out with big fish in no time. Really effective baits. Riptide lures makes a great swim bait. You got this, the swim baits from Strike King, Gary Yamamoto, Yum. Oh man, there's so many. The things are endless. Swim baits. And I'm going to classify creature baits, salamanders, worms, and the same thing. A lot of us don't have the money to be spending $50 on a hard body swim bait. It's going to be a soft sided swim bait. Excellent. Speaking of swim baits, we're going to capture the limelight of topwater lures in the same sense. Because with swim baits, and I tell people to do this all the time, and my first two shows I talked about this when I first started out, people thought I was nuts, okay? Until I had a guy actually do it, and he called in, and I cannot remember the guy's name. It was a new kayaker out of Kansas. And he called in and he said, this really helped me in understanding what's going on, okay? And that is, during the summertime, or if you can get to the YMCA, and no one's there, and you're like, hey, can I throw my baits in your pool? Do it, okay? Have a buddy. Get two or three guys together. If they say, oh, no, if you get three of you guys in there and go, hey, we really like to do this. We won't use lead. We won't do this. We won't do that. Make them happy. Because that's what it's all about, making people happy, happy, happy. But jump in the pool, okay? Have your buddy throw out that bait. And get underwater, underneath it, look at it, be underneath it, be to the side, be up above it, and really look at that bait, okay? You'd be surprised what you might see, okay? And this is where the top water thing comes in. In a deep water lake, okay, especially if you've got the lung capacity and the swimming abilities to dive to the bottom of like a 12-foot, you know, 20-foot, you know, especially the divers, I think it's like 20 or 30 feet deep, something crazy like that, and you can, you know, drop down with the weed or whatever. Get to the bottom, look up, okay? Have them do that top water lure on top. Have them, you know, walk the dog or just slide it through. And then try to identify what color that lure is. You're not going to be able to do it. We use it for this, what's called shadowing, okay? Shadowing or, we had a term in the Marine Corps. Give me a second, I'll figure it out. Skylining, there it is. Skylining yourself. Basically, if I'm sitting in a valley, someone comes up and crests on top of the ridge line, right, with the sun at their back, okay, I'm not going to be able to tell who that is. I just know that someone just walked up there. Okay, I'm not going to see detail as well. It'd be really difficult. Now, if the sun was behind me, similar to what would happen if I was above the bait, sun's going to be behind me, I'm going to be able to look down and see it. I'm going to tell what color that is. I'm going to know who that is up there. Okay, but if the water, if the sun's behind me and I'm looking into the sun and I can see the bait, I'm going to see shadows. Okay, this is where topwater lures I will throw in 15, 20, 30 feet depths, okay, over top of, you know, like I said, hydrilla. I've seen hydrilla up to 20, you know, almost 5 feet to the surface in a 20-foot lake, okay? It happens, you know, the cabbage and the whatever else. There's so many different aquatic plants out there that can grow really quickly, really, you know, and really cover the water column fat rather quickly. Those bass will be inside it looking up, you know, trying to pick stuff off, okay? If the bass is deep, you work that bait over top of them, all he sees is, you know, that hidden spook or the rebel popper, the, you know, the top dog or whatever, I'm you know, walking back in, okay? He's going to see the shadow. He goes, aha, there's my lunch, okay? And it's still important to match the colors, okay, as much as possible. But what I find is that those bass have already, if they're coming up more than 10 feet, they've committed already. They're going to hit it no matter what. Now, they might short strike it, all right? They might, you know, swirl on the back end of it. And miss the fish, but the color I use a lot in clear water lakes is a black topwater. Blasphemy, I hear. You know, my wife just looked at me and, like, I'm a freaking idiot. But, yes, a black topwater in freshwater, if in those clear lakes, if I'm fishing deep water. That bass, like I said, if he's coming from that far of a distance, he's already expelled a ton of energy. So he's going to ambush that bait from underneath, kind of like a great white. Great white, if he's going to come up from the bottom, he's going to launch himself out of the water. You better believe he's going to want that seal sandwich, okay? You know, he's going to fight for it. If he misses it, that's a huge amount of energy he has just expended for no reason at all. So if they're coming from that depth, they will hit it. And I promise you that. If you work you're not going to catch a lot of them, but when you do, it'll be you thought, you know, shallow water blow-ups were big. I'm telling you what, I've seen more big bass come out of the water with that lure in their mouth, like a tuna will, you know, sky or king mackerel, than I've seen, you know, the bowling ball drops. You know, these are just absolutely angry. You know, like a fat kid having to run to a ho-ho. You know, if he's going to have to run, he's going to be angry because he's got to move, kind of thing, right? So, I mean, just awesome topwater bites. And the same thing goes with swim baits, okay? If I'm running a swim bait 10 feet from the underneath the surface in a 40-foot lake, and I've got bass sitting at 38 feet, 35 feet, okay? That swim bait's running at the same depth that that I can mark it on my fish finder. I got bait running, and the bass are underneath them. Okay, this is where the swim bait just excels. I run it at 10 foot the whole time back to my kayak. That bass is sitting at 20 feet, comes up to 15. He's trailing it. If I give it a snap of my rod, right, gives it a little jump. Now that bass, he's already went from 35 feet to 20 to 15, and my 10-foot depth, 10-foot deep bait, he's committed, okay, unless something crazy happens. Like, I get to the kayak again, all right? He's moving up in the water column. He's expelling a ton of energy. He is going to feed on something. He promised himself that. He will sit there and wait for a shad, you know, the blind, dumb shad to be swimming by and just eat it, okay? But you want him to eat your bait. Like, giving him to snap the rod tip will elicit that strike. It'll be that, ah, I see him, I'm getting away. And then, boom, you're hooked up immediately. Okay? Soft body swim baits are great for that. Hard body swim baits, if you want to buy them, more power to you. All of them are excellent, excellent styles. And you notice I haven't talked about something. And this is just me personally. Spinner baits, yes. Trust me, I know spinner baits, old standby, you know, Jimmy Houston and Bill Dance and whoever else made millions off of spinner baits. I just don't like them for deep water. I know I've got guys that are listening on the podcast or listening on their via the Kayak Fishing Radio app that are going, really? You don't like spinnerbaits for deep water? The reason is I'm a burner. I burn my spinnerbaits in. I work them right underneath the surface. Why? Because I really like to see that, you know, that spinnerbait run and all of a sudden, you know, brown or green back and white belly flashing and my bait's gone. I just think that's just too cool. I've never really had a lot of luck running a spinnerbait real deep because I just can't. I don't have the patience for it. So I'm not going to say, you know, X's or O's on spinnerbaits. Because I don't, again, I'll throw a tube before I throw a spinnerbait. I'll throw a chatterbait before I throw a spinnerbait in deep water. And I don't throw chatterbaits barely ever. You know, it's one of those things where I've gone through everything else in the tackle box, and I look down and go, oh, I have a chatterbait. Might as well try to throw it, you know, kind of thing. Tubes. I've talked about tubes a lot in freshwater. If I'm running a tube in deep water, okay, and I'm working a gravel bottom with some large, I'm going to say boulders, but rocks, okay, I know right off the bat what's living in this lake. If it's largemouth, most likely there might be one or two there, but not really all that deep. Largemouth in deep water don't like to sit on the bottom. They'll suspend, okay? But you know what I do know? If I look at the you know what lives there and I see smallmouth, I know they will be on the bottom. They'll be sitting next to those rocks, okay? Picking off the helgramites, the crawfish, the brim, the shad, all you know, minnows, all along that deep water bottom. Okay? And that's where that tube is going to excel. Okay? It's not going to take me a lot to change it out. Heck, I can put it, if I'm running a bait and I'm walking, like I talked about last week, walking that tube in, darting it from side to side. If you want more information, go back to last week's episode on how to do that. And I'm working that in, and I'm not just catching them. And I can physically see them a lot of times. Because I'll follow it in. I'll take a split shot, put it on the end of the line, just to get it to the bottom, okay? Or I'll make a small incision, stuff an egg weight in there, you know, an 1/8 ounce or 1/4 ounce, depending on the size of the tube, egg weight in the head, and, you know, a little bit of super glue seals it right back up again, all right? And now I've got a bait that's actually going to sit there, because I'm pulling more from the middle, I got more weight in the head, so it's going to come down, and those tentacles are going to push up, okay? Now I've basically got a crawfish, a fighting crawfish look, with those big old pinchers sticking up and you're all angry, and hits the bottom, and I'm just going to barely just crawl that back in. And, you know, I've done it 100 times where I've done that. I haven't caught any fish. I've seen them follow it all the way back in. I'm starting to lose my damn mind. Finally, I change it up. I toss it out there, and I work that real slow, And all of a sudden that line will jump, you know, the smallmouth jumped up, where that line kind of goes slack and, you know, almost like a roll cast in Fly Fisherman where it just kind of gets that little jump in the line. And you go, oh, there he is. And you throw down smallmouth. They're not chewers. They're suckers. As soon as they get in their maw, you better hammer them. Come down all the way tight and crack his, twist his eyes off, you know, kind of hooks that, you know, and change the whole aspect of the day. So, like I said, deep water, you know, great for everything but crankbaits. Especially working the deeper edges. It is really, really hard in a kayak. Unless you're trolling. If you're trolling, you're cheating, okay? But working those deeper lakes with the crankbait is really difficult. I haven't mentioned jerkbaits at all. My main thing with jerkbaits is this. This time of year, actually right now, is the only time of the year that I throw a jerkbait. And I use a suspending jerkbait exclusively. I will not throw anything else. Okay? Reason for that is this. As soon as I get my jerkbaits, all right, and I tie them on, the first thing I do is I take some extra weight and put it in the head. Whether it's, you know, lead strips, lead wire, like for fly tires, I'll put a couple wraps around the eyelet, okay, or around a hook, all right. Or I'll take a floating one that'll float, and I'll weight the sucker down with some extra lead so it'll get deep. I want that bait to go deep, okay. And I want it to sit there and suspend. Why? So I'm going to cast that sucker out. I'm going to get to the depth I want. I'm going to snap the rod. I'm going to put the rod down. And I'm going to read a book. Simple as that. I want that bait to sit there for a good 30 seconds, minute, 2 minutes. I'm going to bring it to slack, snap the rod tip again, snap it again, and then put it down. I go snap, 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 snap. That's my cadence. That's the cadence I go with. I don't know why, it just works for me. But just doing that in cold weather, especially the guys in Nebraska now, most likely you don't have any more water, it's now ice. But really, really effective with those jerkbaits. I don't throw them a lot, but when I do, it's always in the wintertime, it's always when it's cold, it's always slow, really, really slow. All right. I think that's going to cover it for deep water, clear lakes. Please listen to the last show. I covered a lot in the last show on different terminal pieces of tackle you're going to need. In essence, your fluorocarbons, stuff like that. All right. Again, I really like... I'd like to thank everyone again for showing up. It's been a ton of fun. Next week, I will not be on. It'll be Christmas Day. I will be enjoying Christmas with my family. I'd like to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Easter, whatever you enjoy. Enjoy it with your family. Hug your kids. Hug your family. Enjoy the times that you have on this world with them. It'll be the day after Christmas. Isn't it? I thought the 25th was on a Wednesday. Either way. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, either way. This will be my last show of the year. Smartass. This is my last show of the year. Okay. We'll pick back up in January. I'll have a whole new way of doing my show. I hope you guys will enjoy it when that comes back. And again, I can't say enough to GapAngler.com, to Jackson Kayaks, and to everyone throughout the year. Past 2 years, actually, who have helped make this possible. I cannot thank you enough. I think tonight we're going to go out with some Grinch. Let's see here. We'll do Grinch 3.
The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank, stunk.
With that, have a wonderful Christmas. Happy New Year, everybody. And until next time, take your kids fishing, stay safe, and love your brother. With that, I say goodnight. Tune in tomorrow night for Chip's show, 8 o'clock, same place, same time, only on Kayak Fishing Radio. Good night, everybody.